my children's waking prayer. We have a waking prayer is, blessed be the God of Israel who raised our Lord Jesus Christ from the dead. Because the idea is that as we wake from sleep and slumber, that is, it's a kind of preparation for when God will raise us from the dead at the end of days, as he raised Christ bodily.
My name is Tim Anderson. Welcome to Father and Friend, where men learn to live for the good of their families. Today we're with Jace Yarbrough. He's a veteran attorney and dedicated public servant. Jace attended the University of Texas at Austin before serving as an officer in the U.S. Air Force. Following his military service, he earned his Juris Doctorate from Stanford University. Jace is a former fellow of the John Jay Institute for Faith, Society, and Law, Alliances Defending Freedom's Blackstone Legal Fellowship, and the Claremont Institute. Jace has been involved in landmark litigation, defending the right to refuse vaccination mandates at work, as well as supporting pro-life and religious liberty causes. He is currently a partner at a Dallas-based litigation boutique, an Air Force reservist, and a champion for education reform. As a father of five and the founder of St. Francis Academy, a classical Christian school in the Denton area, he cares deeply about the vital role parents play in shaping their children's education. I hope you enjoy this conversation. So, Jace, thank you for being here today. And you do have a lot of experience in a lot of areas. You are an attorney, a very busy one at that. And you've run for office, and you care a lot about education. And you're also a father of five. So I would love to hear today about your fatherhood journey and what that's been like for you. And specifically, what are some of the things that you do with your family that you feel like have made a positive impact, or that you feel like every father should be doing, and maybe they're not?
Yeah.
Especially being a busy person.
Sure. Well, thanks, first of all, for having me, Tim. I really appreciate it. It's grateful to be here and chat about something that's so important. One of the gifts that I think I come by naturally is an appreciation for the effect of small daily routines on me and on my kids and our family, and how our natures are stable in some ways, but they're also plastic. They're moldable to a certain extent. And one of the primary tasks that I see as a father is to make sure that the rhythm of life that you've set up, the routines that your kids are and your wife are going through, and you yourself are going through every day, are conducive to holiness. So there's no substitute for daily routines that add to and encourage virtue and prayer, reflection on the scriptures, and these sorts of things. I think that's probably the greatest gift. Well, I don't know if it's the greatest gift, but it's one of the big gifts that I bring to our family, is watching over that and making sure, okay, what's it like when we wake up? What's our morning routine? And for us, I usually am the one that gets my kids up and going in the morning. For my three oldest, they're of the age that it's just a reminder to them, hey, it's time to brush your teeth, time to unload your portion of the dishwasher, that sort of thing. And for our younger ones, I'm still very much involved in teeth brushing and, you know, making sure that underwear is not on backwards and that sort of thing. But I think watching over those routines kind of on an annual basis, what's the annual rhythm of our family? Do we have time in which we are uniquely setting aside for reflection on the highest things, right? You know, every year I take my boys camping for 3 days. I want them to sort of, you know, test the limits and have adventures and do fun things. And so I curate a list of music that we listen to on the drive, and we're only allowed to listen to it. It's just the boys on our camping trip, and have make sure that we've got a book on, an audible book that we listen to that's sort of oriented around outdoorsy stuff and nature, that kind of thing. So those are examples, and those can change from family to family, but having the presence of mind and being able to step back and say, yes, I'm very much in the trenches, but I'm not letting the day-to-day tasks get in the way of making sure that I have an eye toward, okay, are we doing this thing at, it's odd to say the macro level, because these routines are very much, they're small, very things.
Specific, yeah.
Right? But you got to make sure that life isn't just happening to you and your family. I think that's important. And I think that prayer is the thing that has got to be central for any believing family. It's the first place to begin, the last place to end, and it's non-negotiable. And it doesn't have to be long. Like, that's the other thing is, you know, in my experience with kids, you want prayer to be something that's over relatively quickly, because every time you say, hey, it's time to pray, you don't want them to think, oh, this massive sort of long liturgical oration is coming. Like, no,
25 minutes later.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, the scriptures, like, they want us praying 7 times a day. So let's say a prayer when we wake up, 15 seconds. Let's say a prayer before each of our meal. There's 3 more. Let's do a morning prayer collectively as a family, 60 seconds. Let's do a prayer before we go to sleep at night. And you add all those up, and it's just kind of a, you know, again, you're forming a plastic nature toward a habit of prayer that just kind of takes it as a morsel throughout the day. And you want that kind of formation in all areas of life, as to all things that are good, true, and beautiful, so that your kids are naturally inclined, drawn toward those things. And, you know, I'm saying all this, it's not as if, you know, execution is a whole different animal, right?
But
if you,
sure.
don't, if you don't do step one, where you actually have a mind to it, see that, yeah, this is really important. What, you know, I don't know how many guys are still coming home from work in the age of remote work, but what's that routine like when you get home from work? Because it's a turning point in the day.
Yeah, certainly. So, yeah. I imagine that's hard for a lot of men when they are remote, because to come home means to not change location, but change your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sometimes a harder thing to do than it is to change your location.
Yes.
So yeah. You work from home sometimes, or all the time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what does that look like for you to go from I'm working to now I'm focusing on my family?
Mm-hmm. A little unique for us, because I bought a travel trailer and remodeled the master bedroom area.
Mm-hmm.
That's where our office. So
you do change location. Yeah.
The more physical things you can do to signal this is a different time and space, the better. For anyone, though, I think leaving your phone in your workspace is probably the best thing you can do for your family, if we're talking about evening routine. Especially for me, you know, as an attorney, hours can be crazy. I mean, I have filing deadlines for cases across the country. You know, some of them, you know, we have a fairly significant matter right now. It's active in Hawaii. Filing deadline is midnight Hawaii time, which is 4 a.m. our time. And as much as you try to prevent it, sometimes you push things and, you know, you've got more time to make something better. You feel bad if you're not taking advantage of that time. And so you're filing things at 4 a.m., right? I just say that to say schedules can be crazy and hectic, and there can be no boundaries if you don't establish them. My phone can be going off at, you know, 1 a.m., for example. If you don't create physical separation such that you're not going to be distracted by it, then it can come to dominate your life. It can interrupt routines that you've already established with your spouse, with your wife, to say, this is how we want our evenings to flow, so that, you know, we're preparing the kids for bed, they get good night's sleeps, we have, you know, we're going to the Lord in prayer in the times that we want to. So, I think the physical markers are helpful and important, and regardless of what your physical setup is, wherever your office is at home, leaving your phone there in the evenings, I think, is that's a really good thing.
So I want to hear, you mentioned prayer throughout the day.
Yeah.
Do you have a specific way you do that, or do you follow a liturgical prayer?
Yeah.
That's one thing I want to hear about. And then the second thing I want to understand is you mentioned the other routines that you do.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to hear about the specifics. I want to hear like a mental picture of what that looks like on an ideal day, because I know nobody's perfect, sure. Right? But on an ideal day, what does that look like?
Yes. So we're a Catholic family, and one of the gifts, I think, of the Catholic faith that's maybe lost in some others is when you pray, it's very much a corporate thing. And so you're praying things in unison out loud together. Not always. There's definitely individual prayer, private devotions. But the prayers we pray, we often pray them in common. So before meals, it's a simple, you know, bless us, O Lord, and these thy gifts, which we are about to receive from thy bounty, which is common. And then we as a family have added two clauses, which is give us grateful hearts and make us mindful of the needs of others. And so we'll say that together collectively. My children's waking prayer, we have a waking prayer, is blessed be the God of Israel who raised our Lord Jesus Christ from the dead. Because the idea is that as we wake from sleep and slumber, that is, it's a kind of preparation for when God will raise us from the dead at the end of days, as he raised Christ bodily, right? And so those are a couple of examples of that. After our evening meal, we'll sing compline together. Praise be to thee. I have to sing it or I can't remember. Praise be to thee, my God, this night.
You're welcome to sing it.
I don't know if you want me to do that. Praise be to thee, my God, this night. Thank you for all the blessings of the light. Keep me under the shadow of thy wing.
Keep me, oh, keep me, King of Kings, beneath thine own almighty wings.
That's right. That's exactly right. Yeah. So we'll sing that at the end when we're done with dinner. And then the prayer that I pray for my children, with my children as we're going to sleep, I will both lay me down and sleep in peace, for it is thou, Lord, only that that keepeth my soul in safety. And so, you know, and those are very short. I mean, it's quick, right? In terms of a routine, what does a typical day look like? I wake up very early. My wife is a night owl, late sleeper, and I'm exactly the opposite. So I will wake up early and I'll get a bunch of things done. And then my children will start to wake up, I don't know, 7:30. We'll get them up, brushing teeth and clothes on and breakfast and taking care of chores. And then we come together and pray as a family, morning prayer. And we have a little liturgy from a missal that we use for that. And I'll bless them with holy water as part of that prayer. So we have some holy water we keep for that purpose. And then they will begin, you know, lessons with Elizabeth, the first part of which is reading the daily scripture readings and memory verse, that scripture memory verse. And then they'll move into school and lessons. And we do a homeschool, but are also part of a little academy, a little university model academy that we started. Mm-hmm. So depending on the day, either we'll go right into St. Francis Academy or they'll do homeschooling stuff. And, you know, I'll be at work, get done. I come in, I finish up 6:30. And then I'm kind of hanging out with the kids, wrestling with them or whatever, while some of them are helping Elizabeth get things on the table. We'll sit down to dinner. When we're done, you know, it's sing compline, and then everybody's helping to clean up while I go and get the smallest ones kind of ready for bed, put in bed. And then I read to my oldest. I read to my middle two at the same time. They're kind of on the same page.
How old's your oldest?
He'll be 12 this month. He'll be 12 this month.
So he's part of the pickup games.
Very much.
Yeah.
Very much part of the, he loves pickup games. Loves them. It's a great thing. Lots of people come for them when they're good.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's great.
So anyway.
So those are some of the routines that you think are particularly important. Routines, broadly speaking, that we have some regularities what we're doing, but routines that point in the right direction. And point to God, to prayer, and you mentioned the virtues as a good to point your children to. And I imagine by the routines themselves, you're pointing to some sense of stability, perseverance.
Yeah.
Do you think about the virtues specifically when you think about other routines you put together?
The biggest thing I think about is more, I want them to see me taking the faith seriously. So in some ways, you know, there is a sense in which you want your children to feel when they wake up in the morning, like, I'm ready for you. I'm glad you're here. You know, serving you by brushing, this is not a burden. You know, it is a labor, but it's a labor that I can handle as your parent. Like, we're okay, right? They need that, I think, for the first 10 to 15 years of their lives, right? Like, This is a place of joy that we are here together and we are a family. And me being able to serve you through the corporal works of mercy is a way that I can demonstrate that. And me being prepared to do it and having myself gotten up early enough to have taken care of my things. And some days it doesn't work. Some days I just you know, we got a filing and things are blowing up, or there's a big deposition and I got to be on the phone from 6 a.m. until, you know, 2 p.m. It's just how it is.
Mm-hmm.
But really, when I think about the most effective routines, it's, well, I need to pray. And so I'm going to do that. Or I need to reflect on the scriptures. That's important for me. We're now going to do this together as a family. And I'm taking it seriously. They will automatically follow suit with that. Great thing about the scriptures and the faith is, you know, all things are added unto those that pursue after Christ himself, right? So, you know, other than kind of noticing where my children might lack, right? So, like, my oldest, for example, very much like me, conscientious, thoughtful, would always approach a playground and wait on the edge until he had observed, right? What's going on? What are the nature of the kids that are out here playing? What are the various options of toys I could play with before he enters in? I want to make sure that that personality is praised for the strengths that it brings, but also doesn't hold back when the Lord would say it's time to move forward.
Mm.
You know, you got to go and do. So that is probably the only area in which I try and think of things for them to do that would offset, I think, what might be a potential kind of weakness in just their disposition.
Like being a, would you say that's kind of along like the lines of being a doer of the word? Or just being an executor, taking action in something?
For me and my oldest, I don't think it's so much a fear of action.
And so you don't seem like someone who struggles with action.
Yeah, no. Yeah, it's more pride, right? So I want, whatever I do, I want to be the best at it.
Hmm.
And when I begin something, I'm not going to be the best at it.
Mm.
So I don't know that I want to begin.
Mm.
Right. That's really what the...
So the standing back and observing is more like, how can I succeed at this from the get-go?
Yeah. Well, I don't... And strangely, the impulse isn't initially to think, I want to be successful. It's just, I want this thing done well.
Mm.
That's a good impulse. It's a noble impulse.
It is.
But its shadow side is you never do anything because you cannot do anything perfectly.
Right.
And at that point, you just have to kick him in the butt and say, get out there.
Get out there.
Oh, my goodness, I just hit your last.
No, you're fine.
You know, get out there.
I feel like I'm still learning that is to just do.
Yeah. Yeah. It.
Be unafraid of the judgment that might come.
That's right. Yeah. And I think... You know, those moments, it's a weird thing, but when the Lord is, you know, he's intimately familiar with your strengths and your weaknesses. When he gives you a task that requires you to let go of your weaknesses, right, to operate directly contrary to what your whole kind of nature is telling you to do, when you do that, it can be really exhilarating.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, my campaign's a great example of that. Like, very, very vulnerable.
Mm.
Very alone. Never done it before.
Mm.
Am I going to fall flat on my face and everybody's going to see me?
Mm.
And, you know, we were very careful in prayer and discernment before we began that project. And it was probably the most spiritually dynamic time of my life. And I think it was because, in many ways, I was well-fitted for it. But it was also, it took, especially the first months when, because, I mean, I don't know if you, there's no reason you would know, but we got in the last data file. We were basically the least funded, no top cover endorsements, no big names. And it was like everybody was just, like, initially just like,
what are you doing?
And everywhere you go, it's just skeptical, skeptical, skeptical.
Right.
Right. And, you know, and those were, I've never felt more alone.
Mm.
Never felt more vulnerable.
Mm.
Not to be too graphic, but a buddy just, I called him after like 6 weeks and I just told him, I was like, man, I'm exhausted. And it wasn't just the schedule. And he said, well, you're kind of having a public colonoscopy and everybody and it's being stretched out for like months, you know? And in a weird way, that, you know, and so for somebody who, as I said, is like, everything I do, I want to do very well, and I want to, you know, And when there's not, I mean, you can't do that with that sort of project. But it was fulfilling. And so you want, when you see in your children those hesitations, you want them to experience what it's like to grow through so that those very powerful parts of their personalities don't have a dark side anymore. Mm. They've been totally filled and redeemed by the Lord, and now their strengths, right? Because that's when they lead their fullest lives. That's when they're most effective for the kingdom.
Do you feel like that has something to do with, because I can understand what you're saying about the idea of doing something that you would not naturally just choose for oneself, but doing it while trusting God, and the sort of the battle of fear telling you don't do it, and the plunging forward with a yes, even though you have these sort of fears of failure or judgment or criticism or insecurities, and walking through that with your eyes forward, not staring at the fears the whole time, but knowing they're there. And I don't know how anybody really accomplishes that without trusting in God. Like, I don't know how anybody faces their their darknesses or their fears without God next to them. So I can understand that a little bit, that idea of the exhilaration you're mentioning. And it sounds like what you're saying is, I want my sons to experience the exhilaration of doing something that is a real risk. To not just like hurting yourself, but a risk to your own identity in a way.
Yes. Life with God, you know, you want your children to, well, you want to become a saint. You want your children to become a saint. You want them to be completely and totally redeemed by God's grace. That's what you want. And the only path to that is crucifixion. That's it. Christ said, if you want to come after me, you got to take up your cross and follow me, right? And what's a cross? A cross is something to die on, to be crucified on. So whatever the path to, you know, however you want to call it, total redemption, the beatific vision, sainthood, you know, some of these terms might be
called
for different pieces. Holiness, sure. Right? And I don't just mean like an act of virtue. I mean, like, I'm like the burning bush. I'm completely consumed by the fire of God.
Living for God.
Whatever the path to that is, it is going to involve incredible pain and suffering. Christ is the first fruits of our path to redemption. If you do not suffer with him, you're not there yet. And not everybody can suffer yet. They're not strong enough to. So God doesn't give them that yet, right? But the most intense, you know, the saints from our you know, those who we would all acknowledge were people who are very much close to the heart of God. Many of them talk about what they call the dark night of the soul, right? Which is, sounds terrible because it is terrible. When you and your children are doing the thing that God has fitted you and called you to do, it will be ultimately the best for your own salvation. It will. And so it's going to involve pain and suffering. Like, in a weird way, if you don't have any suffering, like, that should probably be a red flag for you. But the crazy thing is that, for me at least, in the midst of that very intense suffering, and I would often describe it to people as crucifixion, I also had this overwhelming sense that I would not want to be anywhere else, doing anything else. If I could sit here for the rest of my life, I would. And because there was this undeniable sense that, yes, the Lord fitted me to do this, and in this moment I am doing the thing that he has fitted me uniquely to do, and if I wasn't doing this necessary thing, it would not be getting done, and it is getting done, and he's doing it, and I'm the only means by which he has to do it, And I, you know, I discerned that and I acted on it and I'm doing it. You know, it's like when we see a, I guess the college football playoffs are going on right now, right? So maybe football's on everybody's mind, right? But when you see a receiver, you know, just make like a fingertip grab, right? Why is it so exhilarating? It was because that's sort of the limit of that person's capacity and capability, right? And when you see that, you think there's something very right about that. And that's what I think when you are genuinely falling after God, he is giving you those moments of like, this is just within your capacity. And when you do it, it's like the most exhilarating thing. And you want that for your kids, right? Just, Lord, let them die full of days in service to you. And so for me, tending to draw back, you know, you can see how that would be an obstacle to that. And for my children that share my nature, I don't want them to.
If you feel like something is virtually impossible, it's easier just to not reach your hand out.
That's right.
Yeah. So that's fantastic. So I'm thinking that men across the board who, you know, broadly speaking, tend to shy away from taking responsibility for things.
Okay.
This would be a good sort of thought process when we think about even the responsibility of family is going, yes, God has put these children in your life to disciple, to raise, and to grasp that responsibility fully. And I'm curious, you're very into education. You started a classical Christian school, St. Francis Academy.
Yes.
Talk a little bit about how you see your role as a father and then what you're doing with the school, how those kind of blend together.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think a key fault with most of the educational approaches today is they don't place enough emphasis on demonstration, or there aren't enough opportunities for children to see their fathers and men taking the pursuit of true, good, and beautiful things seriously. For totally understandable reasons, the vast majority of our public school teachers are women, and that's great. And young boys and girls get to see women taking these things seriously. Good. They also need to see men taking them seriously.
Give me an example of that. What does that look like?
Well, if you never see a man read a book, right? Then what do you think?
Men don't read,
right? One of the statistics that you're probably familiar with, if you want children raised in Christian homes to maintain their faith when they leave home, what's the most important indicator of whether that's going to happen? How seriously does their father practice his faith? Is he with them in church every Sunday? Does he lead them in prayer? Does he read them the stories from the Old Testament? The same is true in other things. If you want them to be readers, or you want them to appreciate it, at least not everybody has to be a reader, but if you want them to appreciate reading, well, do you appreciate reading? And I don't just mean do you say things to them because you know it's important that they appreciate reading, but you don't appreciate reading and you never do it, right? Like, well, so one of the things that we do, we have, you know, I sometimes will describe St. Francis Academy as a training for parents in how to form their children. And then we teach our children almost as a practicum in what we ourselves are learning together and doing together. We have twice annual trainings for our parents. We have parent culture nights, which is a time when we as parents come together and we enjoy what you might consider a little more high culture. We read a play together, or there's a local poet who I know, he's come in and read an original work for us and we talked about it. And the point is to get us in the habit and practice of pursuing these things with the faculties that God has given us, so that we can be fully alive as he's created us to be alive. And then our children will observe that in us. If you try to talk about an opportunity for students to see their fathers, to see men taking subjects seriously, there's no place to even put that in the kind of public school approach. Curriculum development doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. I think to their detriment. Now, are there great teachers who are in the public school system? Many of them men. Yes, there are. But as a whole, this idea that, no, these are things that are worthy of the time, not only of you, the student, but also kind of the most time-jacked person in your life, which tends to be your father. Mm. So, and not to say that, I mean, my wife's time is like every second of the day is spoken for as well. But, you know, that I think is a big, that's something that we're trying to communicate, trying to form families in.
How do you do that when so many men are, you know, I mean, yourself included, right? You spend 40, 50, 60, 70 hours a week working away from the family. And for a lot of men, they're not even able to be close, right? They got to go to the warehouse or to the store or to the office, whatever it happens to be.
Yeah.
And so eating breakfast, lunch, and dinner together is a very difficult task. It seems like you've chosen to prioritize your family despite how busy your work is, or at least attempt to. How do you see that happening in a busy family such as yourself? Obviously, you're doing it, but for someone who doesn't have maybe the same flexibility, maybe?
Yeah. Yeah. So there is some, there is an element of, this is important, we're going to do this, right? So we're going to sit down and have an evening meal together every
day. We're going to do it, you know, regardless of what the problems
are.
We're
going to do that. There is some of that. The other thing, though, is that just like with everything else in a routine, like you have to kind of, if you rely just on willpower, it's like the Christian life, right? If you think, oh, what would Jesus do? One day, God will give me an impossible task, go to China and die for some indigenous group of people and bring the gospel to them, right? And when he asks me to do that, I'll do that. But until he gives me a big task like that, I don't really have anything to do. Mm. It's not how we're built. We're built to... I mean, we're shaped by our environments, and the things that our environments conduce us to, eventually, we become those things. Mm. So you have to build...
We become our routine.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. And you become what you allow to dictate your routine. So, I mean...
So if I allow work to dictate my routine...
Or if you don't intentionally make yourself necessary for your children, right? So if you're the guy who brushes your four-year-old's teeth... And if you don't do that, his teeth don't get brushed. Well, you're going to spend that little amount of time with him every day, right? Mm. Now you got to be reasonable about it and make sure that, you know, I mean, if you work a factory and your shift starts at 6 a.m., like, you're not brushing that kid's teeth in the morning because hopefully he's still asleep when you leave, right? That's good. That's fine. But you have to find those places where the necessity of our life is here. It's not just, I'm going to set aside 10 minutes so I can just sit down and, like, spend time with you. Like, yeah, that's not, I don't know if that's going to work. But when it's, hey, I'm the guy that takes them to this event, or I'm the guy that makes sure that they're up and ready for the day, or whatever, like, you're going to spend that time together. Mm-hmm. And doing the things of life with your kids, I mean, that's how most of my time gets spent, right? Mm-hmm. I read to them in the evenings, but other than that, we're eating dinner, doing the dishes, you know, getting ready for the brief moments of prayer sprinkled throughout. So I would say that.
But you're accomplishing tasks together.
You're accomplishing necessary tasks together, right? And that makes sure that it happens. Mm. Yeah, because now it's not like, oh, we got to find an extra 10 minutes so I can sit down and just like have a conversation. It's like, oh, I got to brush his teeth before he goes to school. Mm. So that, I think, is more important than have the willpower to set aside the time. It's where are you going to be a necessary part of the rhythm of your family's life to meet basic needs. Because that's going to happen every day, right? I guarantee you, you go a couple days without brushing your kid's teeth and your wife finds out about it. And you're like, okay, we need to fix something. Or like, you need to change. Like, which way are we going to go here, right?
So. That's good. So, and you kind of mentioned this already a little bit about prayer. So that was education. That was involving yourself in your kid's life. And I suppose in that, when you are injecting yourself into necessary routines, you would be using that as an opportunity to have conversations, or is it that intentional? Or is it more like, hey, the routine is sufficient. We're doing this together. I'm brushing your teeth. Mm-hmm. And I'm not doing it So here's an example. I find myself sometimes, I'm brushing the teeth to get over brushing the teeth.
Yes.
I'm trying to finish brushing the teeth.
Yes.
I don't want to brush the teeth anymore. I just want to be done brushing the teeth.
Yep. That's right.
But I think sometimes I miss the opportunity to really be there.
Yes.
In the brushing.
Yep.
I mean, it sounds a little silly, but I think there's a truth in that. Yep. Sometimes we're trying to get through the activity instead of be in the activity.
That's correct. Yes. And that is a danger. And for some people, you know, I'm one of those people. My tendency is to think about how I could have been more efficient in the past and how I'm going to execute on the plans that I have for the day in the future. Mm. Right. And that's where I live. But I never have any of those moments. The only moments that I have are now. Mm. Right. There are two times that I know will happen in my life. Right now and the moment of my death. Mm. Those two things will happen in my life. That's it. So, yes, I agree that the point is to be present in the brushing of the teeth. Be there. And it really is. I mean, there's such a, like, I think sometimes in parenting and education, we as believers, we buy into this Gnostic heresy, which is really what matters are kind of the ideas, the abstract things that I'm communicating with my children about. I'm telling them this or that, or they're coming to this understanding, or I'm conveying this knowledge. Knowledge is good. The abstract component of who we are as people is good. But, you know, God did not make us spirits. He made us men. And to be men, there are three things you have to have. You have to have spirit, body, both of them together, same time. If you're missing any one of those, you're not a man.
What's the third thing, both of them together?
Both of them together, okay. Yes. So C.S. Lewis says the whole of Christianity can be proved by two facts. And this is a little bit of a hyperbole, right? He says, one, men tell crude jokes. And two, they're afraid of ghosts. When you see a corpse, which is a body without a spirit, does it make you uncomfortable? Yes. Why? Because you know something's wrong. Mm. You see a spirit without a body or a ghost. Does it make you uncomfortable? Yes. Because you know something's wrong, right? The doxology, what is the place or role of man in creation? We are the unique link between the material matterful world and the spiritual world, right? So we can call all creatures here below to praise God at the same time that we're calling ye creatures of the heavenly host, mm-hmm. right? We can call both because we're a part of both. Mm. So when you're brushing teeth, you don't have to always be emphasizing the abstract, right? That was the Gnostic heresy, and they fell into that. This special knowledge is what's going to save me, right? Having the correct understanding is what's going to save me. Yeah, I mean, not totally, right? Not totally. God has given us the means of salvation, which are appropriate to our natures. And what are our natures? Both spiritual and physical. Mm. So he's given us those spiritual means of salvation, but also physical means of salvation. Right? Thanks be to God that I can bow in prayer and close my eyes, because sometimes my heart does not feel like doing that. Mm. I cannot make this inner man, but I can make my body do things. Mm-hmm. That's an advantage of the material. Mm. Use that to your advantage in something like, you don't have to like, you know, like sometimes life is so hectic. You don't have the next Bible lesson prepped for when I brush his teeth the next morning. I don't know what I'm going to talk with him about, but I'm just going to be there and like, kind of tickle him a little bit as I brush his teeth and just like enjoy it. Like, hey, we can just take a minute, you and I, and do this thing which is required to take care of your body, this gift that God has given you. And it also gives us a moment just to pause. Mm-hmm. Right now, I don't want to glorify brushing teeth because it's not all glorious, okay? But there is a beauty. And I think in every age, you have to be conscious of the sort of heretical tendencies. And our heretical tendency for this age, especially with our children, is drastically individualized, abstract understandings of what salvation actually means. Mm. And so physical routines and injecting yourself into them is a way to sort of staunchly say, like, no. You know, our physicalness is important. It's a glorious thing. We're going to actually physically be together. And in some ways, that's enough.
Mm. Mm, that's good. When I brush the teeth tonight.
Keep it in mind.
I'll be brushing to the glory of God.
All right, do it.
Awesome. No, that's good. I think in our world of you know, always trying to check emails and text messages and not wanting to miss something that is appears important, we often miss what's most important. Mm-hmm. And I find myself drawn into that often. And I'm actually in the middle of working on journaling every morning, mm-hmm. partly to say that to myself, is to, if the first morning I did it, about three sentences in, I thought I could be doing something else right now. Mm-hmm. And the next sentence I wrote was, a couple days ago you were asleep right now. There's no difference between you being asleep right now and taking the next few minutes to write. It would have been exactly the same end result. Mm-hmm. You would have ended it pretty much the same time, whether you were asleep or whether you're writing. So for me to want to hurry through that and finish, mm-hmm. is a very strange desire, given that I was already up before I had been up previously.
Yeah.
But that idea of rushing through mm-hmm. every single good thing,
yeah.
instead of truly being there and doing it, something as simple as, you know, writing a journal entry, mm-hmm. never mind brushing my teeth, brushing my kids' teeth, mm-hmm. With them, mm-hmm. really with them.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm. Yeah.
Things that are, that we should cherish are turned into tasks mm-hmm. to complete.
Yeah.
Instead of.
Yes.
Maybe humans to develop or relationships to develop.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right.
So you mentioned the idea of, I've heard many times people tell me, I'm doing this for my kids. I'm, mm-hmm. I need to be a better man for my kids. Yeah. And I've gone back and forth on this idea of whether I should believe that my kids are the reason for me doing something versus, and this is the one I prefer, my kids are a mirror to show me what I'm really like, and that when I see my kids doing something, I'm able to actually more clearly see what's better for myself because I can see what's clearly good for my children. And you kind of hit on something a little bit like that when you talked about the routines and how men, how we can do things that are for, to enjoy what's good and beautiful. Mm-hmm. This idea of being present and not letting ourselves just be dragged through life. Mm-hmm. So, I had a question for that, but I don't remember what it was at this point.
Well, it's an important thing to remember that your children are going to become you.
Yes.
Your children will become you.
Yes. Maybe it's the idea of people when they say, do what I say, not what I do.
Yeah.
That falsehood.
That is a falsehood.
Yeah, but it's really...
It's a Gnostic falsehood.
Yeah.
Which says the abstract material words that I give are more important than the example, not just that I offer you to observe, but that I bring you into. Because you are now becoming a part of my life and my routine as my child.
Mm.
And so it is true that you should become better for your kids' sake. You should. It's also true that observing how your own practices, when incarnated in them, redound, you know, to their detriment,
mm-hmm.
makes you very eager to change.
Yeah, no, that's a good way to say that, that our practices get incarnated in them. That's very true.
They do.
Yeah.
Yes, they instantiate them, and they do become a mirror. And which of those motivations is the most pure? God will take all of them to draw you into the practices that he needs of you to prepare you for whatever work he has mm-hmm. for you to do. And I will take whatever the motivation is. If it prompts the first step toward holiness and virtue, then...
Mm-hmm. What other practical things do you do with your family that you feel like every man should do? We've got prayer...
Yes.
We've got routines of various kinds, yes. But routines, broadly speaking, routines that point your family and your children towards what's good mm-hmm. and beautiful. Mm-hmm. What other things, is there any other practices that you do that you feel like, yeah, every father should be doing this thing?
You should be reading the stories from the Old Testament to your kids.
Okay, the Old Testament. Why specifically the Old Testament?
Because the New Testament, this is hyperbole, okay? The New Testament is, well, it's directed more toward the abstract. It's a little more theological. There are stories.
Certainly.
There. Read them. Mm-hmm. Read the stories from the New Testament. Read about St. Stephen, the first martyr, right? Mm-hmm. Read about the Nativity, right? Read about the Annunciation. Read these things. Read about Paul and evangelizing the known world. Like, all that's good.
Yeah, but you get four books of narrative. And then yes. you've got
and then
the
you've
rest.
Got really letters to churches about
theological
things
issues
are going on, right?
How to understand Jesus.
Yes. Children, we grasp truth through story and context. So the Old Testament is the richest treasure of the truths that you want your child to have. Okay? Like, take the idea we were just talking about of what it's like to follow Christ in your vocation. Mm-hmm. Okay, so when you're doing that thing that He has called you to do, using the faculties and gifts He has given you, it's a very fulfilling thing. It's also a very crucifying thing, and it should be. Those are indications that you are, in fact, following after God and what He has given you to do. Now, how do you communicate that idea to a child? That's hard if what you try to do is sort of like high soteriology, and well, this is the nature of man is such that, and the nature of fallen man is this, but then when we're redeemed, it's that. But in fact, the non-competitive transcendence of God means that He doesn't destroy you, you become more yourself, right? And pretty soon, you're like, the kid's four, right? Unless you say, well, let me tell you a story about Moses. He was watching his father-in-law's sheep one day, and he saw a bush, and it was burning, but it wasn't consumed. Have you ever seen anything on fire that didn't burn up? No, right? And you tell them that story. And then you say something like, you know, when you follow Jesus, it's kind of like being that bush. God completely overwhelms you, but you're not destroyed. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. How, like, you can't, without the story, there's no way that you can begin to draw your child into the rich divine life. Right? I mean, it's just impossible. And the second thing is this. There are truths of the scriptures which you hide in their heart now through story, which will become evident to them at some point in the future, you know not when. And when they do, when the sort of echo of that Old Testament story comes alive for them in their lives, it will be one of the most confirming aspects of your care and love for them, but the truth of the faith. Those moments of revelation for them in their own lives and experience will be one of the things that grounds them most firmly to Christ. They will hold on to Him tighter than they hold on to anything. Mm-hmm. You know, for example, right? You tell them the story of Joseph in the Old Testament, right? Who was Joseph in the Old Testament, right? He was the one who resisted Potiphar's wife, was thrown into prison, and then made by the king second in command of all of the kingdom. And what happened because of it? He saved basically his entire family, protected them in Egypt mm-hmm. from the worst ravages of a famine that was happening elsewhere, right? One day they'll realize that the New Testament Joseph is exactly the same, mm-hmm. that he was made by the King of Kings, protector over the Holy Family mm-hmm. in Egypt while the rest of the world was dark. Right, and the rest of the world was basically out to get the baby Christ, right? And you don't have to offer all these things to them initially, but appreciation for the divine work that is the scriptures is irreplaceable, and they cannot fully appreciate it unless they know the Old Testament stories. Mm-hmm. They just can't. So, and it's good for you too. So one of the things that one of the most precious times of the week for me is on Sunday mornings. We will read, in our we have readings for the day. Like, there are Old Testament, New Testament, Gospel readings that are paired together because there's theological connection right there. So we'll read those, and we usually will listen to a sermon by a bishop that I appreciate. And then we're talking about it. And there's a little bit of like formal catechesis, right? It's like, right now it's just the books of the Bible. Like, I just want you to be able to list the books of the Bible in order. Let's just do that. But really it's talking about, okay, what's the meat of what's going on here, right? And my oldest, who's almost 12, he and my daughter are real, she's 10. My next one down is 7. The 7-year-old and those below, they're just kind of there. You know, this is a little bit more catechesis. It's mm-hmm. a little bit more, formal and abstract. But he just, like, they cannot get enough of it. You know, it's like, they'll say, I really like Bishop Barron's sermons because he makes me think about things. I'm like, yeah, they're being drawn up and in.
Right.
Last thing I'll say about this, when you read to your children from the Old Testament, read the actual, like, there are so many kids' Bibles, and I'm not knocking kids' Bibles, but, like, I don't want the editor's version. Mm. There are too many layers.
Yeah, I'm
there are too many.
You.
There are too many beautiful things that I don't even know about, right, that get left out. Not that I'm against, like, you know, the Jesus Storybook Bible, and, like, everything's the gospel. And it's like, yeah, everything is the gospel, and that's great, but, like, what I want are those little bitty, I mean, the Bible is so laconic, right, just so efficient. Mm. One line. And 10 years down the road, that one line that you eternalize could just drop on you like a ton of bricks, right? Mm. Really put a fire in your belly to live for Christ. So make sure that you're reading to them. And there is one, there are a couple that are like, they go out of their way to be both children's Bibles, but also the scriptures themselves, which is just, we're going to take all this and we're going to put it in a single chronological order, right? Mm. So we're going to take all those, like, you know, cross-referencing parts and, like, Kings and Chronicles.
Combine
and
Esther, them together.
Right? And we'll make sure you get one, you know, one time, narrative. One pass, one story, right? That's good. That's fine. But do that, right? So that's another little bit of a routine. Sunday mornings, that's what we do. And it's good.
Mm, I love that. That's great. Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being with us today, Jace.
Tim, thanks.
Appreciate
for
it.
Me. Yeah.
Fellow fathers and friends, so glad you could join us for this episode. To stay connected, visit our website at fatherandfriend.com. Sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and other social media sites. Be sure to like, follow, and share with fellow dads and families in your community. If you have a topic you'd like us to discuss, send us a message and let us know. Until our next episode, keep showing up, loving deeply, and making an impact for the good of your family. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on Father and Friend.